Joining us is the counselor to the president. Dan Bartlett is with us. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so here we are, 2 days, historic elections coming in Iraq. All accounts, 70-80% of people may actually go out there and vote. Is that possible?
Well, we do think it's possible, and it's really a testament to the Iraqi people that they are showing the world that they want a democracy. They are defying the terrorists and saying they're not going to be intimidated from voting. Now, in some parts of the country, it's going to be difficult because the terrorists have had more success than in other parts, but I think it's a real story about the Iraqi people and about the determination of not only U.S. military forces, but coalition forces, mm-hmm. providing an opportunity for the Iraqi people to see this day.
We have been the last 2 days, both on radio and TV, discussing the comments yesterday, 3 days out of the election, of the distinguished senator from the state of Massachusetts, Ted Kennedy. When he says, quote, the U.S. military presence has become a part of the problem, not part of the solution, when he once again accuses the president of being a liar, when he says our military insurgents are fighting a battle for the same thing, the hearts and minds of people, and that in that battle we are not winning, and then calls for a withdrawal, at this time, this critical, crucial time, knowing that his words will be echoed all over Al Jazeera and elsewhere, what do you make of what he's trying to accomplish here?
Well, Sean, I know you spent a lot of radio time trying to figure that out. I can't. I'll leave it to other pundits and analysts to try to determine what his motivations could have been. From a foreign policy perspective, and more importantly, from a military strategy, it is disastrous to try to set artificial timetables for withdrawal. Anybody knows that the enemy is smart enough to wait and hold its time until you decide to leave and then to strike. And it's now the timing is peculiar. I can't understand what the strategic emphasis may be, or the politics of it could be, quite frankly. And it's disappointing. But the important part is that. Point is that the same time that Senator Kennedy was popping off here in Washington, President Bush was on Arab television with Al Arabiya speaking directly to the Iraqi people, saying, we're behind you. We think you're courageous for going forward and voting this weekend, and we're not going to desert you.
One of the biggest challenges, Dan, is and Dan Bartlett is with us, counselor to President Bush, is you've got 90% of the country secure, and we expect in those areas, more specifically the Kurds in the north and the Shia in the south, that their turnout's going to be extremely large. And the problem is there's this minority area, what's known as the Sunni Triangle, where the minority Sunnis are the targets of this intimidation factor in these insurgents. Let's say the voter turnout in that area, as expected, is going to be lower. What can the administration do constitutionally? What role should they have in terms of influencing when a constitution is being crafted to ensure that there is Sunni participation in the government?
Well, that's a good question. One way to look at it, there's 18 provinces throughout Iraq. About 15 of them, there shouldn't be any problems at all for people to vote. And 3 of the provinces is the areas that you just discussed. And it's going to be, the president was briefed by his generals on the ground, General Casey and others, just yesterday, and they say that people even in those provinces where the tough fighting is will have the opportunity to vote. So we hope it'll be as large a turnout as possible. We also know our own story and our own story of democracy, in which there has been underrepresentation of minorities. There has not been the type of participation as you would like in every election. But the important aspect for your listeners to understand is that this is the first of a series of votes that's going to take place in Iraq. There is this vote that is going to be for the assembly. There's a constitutional vote in which people can participate. And then at the end of the year, after they ratify the constitution, they can vote on a permanent government. I think the other important thing to understand is that Shia leaders and Kurdish leaders are also saying they recognize that for a free Iraq to emerge, that it's going to have to be based upon representing all the people, that minority rights should be protected, and that leadership ought to reflect the different factions as well. So I think the leaders in Iraq are saying the right things that give us assurance that they understand that to be free, to be prosperous, to be democratic, you must have these protections. And,
yeah,
and we will work with them, but they will be a sovereign government. We will be there at their invitation, and we will work to help them make that a reality.
Tony Blair in Switzerland just 2 days ago said the following. He said, quote, "I thought progressives," and he's really saying liberals, "I thought progressives," and he is a part of labor. He is,
sure,
in Britain. "I thought progressives were all in favor of freedom rather than tyranny." And he was referring to President Bush's speech, and he went on to say that it marks a consistent evolution of U.S. policy. But when you look at world reaction to the liberation of Iraq, and now we have this historic election taking place. I'm talking about Germany, I'm talking about Russia, France, the corruption at the UN, lack of resolve, the UN Oil for Food program, and then here at home, comments like Ted Kennedy saying it's a failure, etc. Whatever happened to this notion that I thought progressives were in favor of freedom rather than tyranny?
It's a very good question, and obviously he is... Prime Minister Blair is articulate and a powerful speaker who brings a lot of credibility to these issues. It is interesting. I think I don't know if people are in denial who are critics of the president or what, but if you look at his inaugural address, at the centerpiece of his argument for our foreign policy, not only for security reasons, but to live up to the truest ideals of our country, he put human rights and freedom as the centerpiece of U.S. foreign policy going forward. Who can disagree with that? Who can say that this shouldn't be the foreign policy goals and the universal values for all countries and all people to unite behind? And that was the point of the speech.
It is what our founding document, our Declaration of Independence, is all about, that
Absolutely.
We are endowed by a creator, and it is the natural state of man. Well, anyway, Jacques Chirac's too interested in his global tax.
And I noticed.
And I'm sure the president will not be supporting that. Now, I also read recently, he has a pending meeting with Jacques Chirac. When is that coming up?
We are going to have that meeting when the president's over in Europe.
Okay, and when is that?
And that is the third week of February.
Okay, now next week is the State of the Union address.
Yep.
Many of the same themes that we heard in the inauguration speech?
Well, I think what you'll see is the fleshing out of those themes. The inaugural address is an opportunity to take a step back and say, this is the direction of our country. These are the values and the ideals in which we pursue. This is the direction of our government as well. And what really next week will provide is a blueprint, so to speak, as to how we will achieve those goals over the course of the next year and in some cases over the course of the next 4 years. So it's obviously an opportunity to speak more legislatively or through administration how we're going to execute the principles that were outlined in the inaugural. Mm-hmm. And it really comes down to two different things, and that's one, how do we really usher in an ownership society here in America that will make sure that this generation of leaders leaves behind a State of the Union that is worthy of the next generation of our children and grandchildren. And a centerpiece of that, obviously, will be talking about how do we strengthen our Social Security system for the 21st century, as well as making sure that we continue to have prosperity here in America by keeping our economy growing. And then obviously, as the president's talked about, with having freedom and democracy at the centerpiece of our U.S. foreign policies, is how we're going to pursue that, particularly in when it comes to pursuing the war on terror, as well as theaters such as Iraq, what we're doing in the Middle East, and other issues to fulfill the ideals of that foreign policy.
How did the president respond to the intensity of the attacks on both Condoleezza Rice, now Secretary Rice, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and Alberto Gonzalez? It came out just today that the Congressional Hispanic Caucus has declined to endorse Alberto Gonzalez. He came out of a committee vote that was split along party lines. They basically insinuated Condi was a liar, Barbara Boxer's attack against her. How does the president respond to that behind the scenes?
Well, it's obviously he's disappointed. We could not have put forward two more qualified people for those two posts. I think I read this morning that there has never been that type of opposition to a president's Secretary of State, particularly of one of her credentials. Obviously there are going to be differences over foreign policy or differences over policies, but to use the confirmation process to make these points, I think, sends a terrible signal when it comes to how a president is able to conduct his business after winning the confidence of the American people. The president has always led his party based on, let's demonstrate to the American people what we're for. It seems to me that the Democrats and the other party have always are defining themselves about what they're against. And I think that was a critical difference in the election this past year. And it seems to me they're following the same pattern going into the new year. And that's, but the president's going to continue to work to reach out. He believes that there are some Democrats on Capitol Hill that want to work to
Who?
Well, that's we're in that process right now, Sean. We're optimistic.
I don't know if you heard Zell Miller left. He's anymore.
That is correct. But you know, look, we're going to be optimists about it. We're going to. It's going to be the other party denying or at least refusing to work with us because the president's going to reach out. He feels like he has an obligation.
I got to be honest. I'm not as optimistic as you. I mean, we had basically the entire election last cycle, and these are my words, Dan, not yours, where a party ran on their disdain for a president. That was not enough to get them elected. They seem to, with the Alberto Gonzalez hearings, Condoleezza Rice hearings, this absolutely despicable speech by Ted Kennedy, they've learned nothing in the last year. And it is getting more shrill and more harsh and more unreasonable, it seems to me, by the day. And I don't know where these reasonable Democrats are. They need to step out.
Well, it's got to come up through the ranks of their own party, and maybe, like you said, maybe they haven't gone completely through their process of soul searching to understand that. But the president's going to continue to conduct his business in a civil manner and have a contest of ideas, not mean spirit attacks on each other personally.
Just wait for the Social Security battle to begin, and we'll have you on, I'm sure, back at that point.
I'd love to.
Dan Bart, listen, congratulations on your big position. Now counselor to the president. Good to talk to you. Send the president our regards, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
It's an honor to be on.